This morning's Old Testament reading came from the book of Ruth. And we pick up the story here this morning in verse 8. And so we missed the first seven verses of the story. In verse 8, we find Naomi trying to send her daughters-in-law back home to Moab. But how did we get to this point where Naomi wants to go from Moab back to Israel, and she wants to send her daughters-in-law? Let me go back to the beginning of the story and start there. In those first verses, we're told that the story began in the days of the judges, and there was a famine in the land. And there was a man from Bethlehem in Judah who, together with his wife and two sons, went to live in a far-off country of Moab. And the man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi. And the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. Now Elimelech, we're told in verse 3, Naomi's husband, he died, and she was left with two sons. And they married Moabite women. One was named Orpah, and the other was named Ruth. And after they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion, the two sons, they also died. And so Naomi was left without her two sons and without her husband, in a foreign land with two Moabite daughters-in-laws. There's so much that happens in these first few verses. So much time passes, over 10 years, and so much life happens. And we find Naomi's life in utter ruins when we pick up the story. You know, often when we think of suffering in the Bible, who's the first character that comes to mind? Often it's Job. You know the story of Job. There's an entire book of the Bible dedicated to his suffering. He lost his wife, his children, his home, his cattle. He was covered in sores. He ended up in an ash pit, scraping his sores, and his friends were telling him to repent. Job truly suffered. But I think that Naomi is the female Job. In this story, she suffers, and she suffers, and she suffers. And we don't often think about her suffering because it's covered in four or five quick verses. And so we just gloss over it and go on. But think this morning about her suffering. First of all, she suffered because her family experienced a famine. They lived in this town called Bethlehem, which in Hebrew means house of bread. And there came a famine, and they were starving. We read that word famine, and we kind of just keep moving as Americans because we've never experienced famine. We don't know what it's like to starve. When we say, oh, I'm starving, that means we haven't eaten in 3 hours, maybe 4 hours. For them, starvation was real. So you have to picture maybe Somalia and a mother, and it's hot and it's dusty, and she's got six kids, and one of them is dying from starvation, and the other is sick, and she's trying to get to the UNICEF clinic so that she can save the lives, and she's walking down these dusty, dry roads. That's the picture of famine. That's what Naomi's family looked like as they left Bethlehem. They were starving. And they needed to find a place with food. And as a parent who has children who need food, you'll do anything. And so they left their home, their family, the people they knew, and they went to a foreign land, the land of Moab. She's suffering from famine. She becomes a refugee. She's an immigrant. She goes and she lives in a foreign place where she doesn't know the culture or the language. And there's a history of political tension between the two countries, so she's probably despised and looked down on. Her family really has a tough time living in this new place. They've got to adapt to their ways. They don't know anybody. It's not like she can pick up the phone or email her mother back at home or her family. They're alone. They're in a new place. She is suffering. And what happens when she gets there? Her husband dies. Elimelech, he passes away. The patriarch, the man of the house. Again, we can't fathom how devastating this would have been to a Middle Eastern woman 2,500 years ago. A woman without a man had no way to support herself. She had no way to get on in the world, to provide a home or clothing. She was probably a little older, so what man would want to marry her? Because what's a woman's purpose in that society? To produce children. So she really had no hope of getting married again. She's on her own, but thank God she has two sons. She has two sons who can carry on the name of their father and who can grow up and get married and have a family and can support her and care for her. So at least she has some safety net there. And those two sons, though, What do they go? They go and start their family, and they marry Moabite women. If you know anything about Israel history, Moabite women were prohibited. You were supposed to marry an Israelite. And so they go ahead and marry the local women. I'm sure that caused Naomi much grief as well. Here we are in a foreign land. I'm not providing a good husband, good wives for my sons. They're marrying foreign women who are pagans, who don't serve the true God. I'm sure that caused her many sleepless nights. And then it says that they're married for 10 years, and there's no mention of children. These women were barren. They have no sons, no daughters. Again, in a society where the only purpose was to produce children so that the line could go on, these women, Orpah and Ruth, these Moabite women, produced no heirs. They were barren. They're Moabite and they're barren. And then what happens after that? The two sons pass away. So Naomi, an older woman, is left in a foreign land with two daughters-in-laws. No sons, no heirs, no way to provide a roof over their head to give bread to these daughters-in-laws. What is she to do? She is truly a woman who has suffered. And we pick her up on the road as she's going back to Israel. She decides, there's nothing for me here. I can't do anything. I'm going to go back to Israel. Maybe I have some family that'll take care of me. And so she gathers up everything that she has. It probably fit on her back. And she took her two daughters-in-laws, because they were still attached to her. They were still a part of her family. They married her sons. She was responsible for them to help them find new husbands. But as they go along the road, what does she do? She stops outside of Moab, and she says, Orpah, Ruth, go back. Go back to your home in Moab, because there's nothing for you here in Israel. If they were to go back to Israel as Moabite women who had a history of barrenness, their chance of finding a husband was very small. Go back to your fathers. Go back to your land. Most people think that she brought them away from Moab before she sent them back because she was afraid they would try to talk her into staying. So she started down the road and sent them back. She honestly cares for these women, and she thinks they have a better chance back in their home country. She sends them back. One daughter-in-law goes back, but Ruth, we read this morning, clings to Naomi and says those famous words, "My God, your God will be my God." And she chooses to stay with Naomi. It's while on this journey, as they're going back, that Ruth makes a decision. And she makes a decision that doesn't make much logical sense. What is better for her? To go back to Moab, to go back to her brothers and her father. She knows at least she'll have a home there. But she chooses to go with Naomi. And often we think the story is remarkable because she chooses Naomi. But as I studied it this week, I realized the remarkable thing is she's not just choosing Naomi. She's choosing Naomi's God. She is making a faith decision for God. She is choosing Yahweh, the God of the Israelites. Carolyn Custis James, who wrote a book, a fabulous book, I recommend it, on Ruth, tells in her book about her time when she was studying in Oxford. And she says in Oxford, on a place called Broad Street, there's a simple stone cross embedded in the road. And she says that cross marks the spot where in 1555, Anglican bishops Nicholas Ridley and Hugh Latimer were burned at the stake for their Christian beliefs. And the dying Latimer, we're told, cried out while he's on the stake, he's dying, he cried out to his friend Ridley. He said these words, "Be of good comfort, Master Ridley, and play the man. We shall this day light such a candle by God's grace in England, as I trust shall never be put out." It was a moment of such significance in English history that Oxford has an X to mark the spot on the road, on the spot where it happened. And Carolyn James writes these words. She says, "If I had my way, there would be a large stone X embedded in the middle of the road that runs from Moab around the Dead Sea over to Bethlehem." There should be a large X to mark the spot where Naomi tries to send her daughters back to Moab, because it's one of the most important spots in biblical history, and it hasn't been given the significance it deserves. She says this is one of the most dramatic moments in all of biblical history. And again, it's not because Ruth chooses to be devoted to Naomi. No. It's because here, Ruth chooses to follow Yahweh, to follow the God of the Israelites. Against overwhelming evidence, remember, Naomi had done nothing but suffer famine and death and loss until she's left alone. And Naomi is bitter against God, and she cries out to God. And Ruth still says, I choose to follow your God. Why? Why would she follow this God of Naomi? We can only speculate this morning. We don't know. But maybe coming from a pagan culture, a Moabite culture, where there's probably pagan worship, maybe even child sacrifice, and marrying into a Jewish family, maybe she saw that there was a real difference. Maybe there's a real difference between Israelites and Moabites. Maybe she heard their history of how God rescued them from Egypt and brought them through the sea. She watched them interact with their neighbors and how they loved one another and how they worked in their families. And she watched them deal with death. We don't know exactly why she chose the God of Israel, but we do know that along that road, on that journey from Moab to Bethlehem, God closed in on Ruth. God closed in on Ruth. This morning, I want to suggest that God is closing in on all of us, and he's calling out to us. Maybe you've had an experience in your life where you've come to that moment where you realize that God is calling me, and I need to make a decision. C.S. Lewis famously describes in his book, Surprised by Joy, it's his spiritual autobiography. He talks about that moment for him. He was on a bus in Oxford, and he was riding on the top of one of those double-decker buses that they have in the U.K., and he's going along, and he had been thinking about Christianity and religion for 5 years, and he's an intellectual, and he's got all these objections and all these questions, and it just doesn't make sense yet, but it's starting to come together. But he keeps reading and studying and thinking, and he's sitting on that bus, and he says, all of a sudden, I felt like I was faced with a choice, and there was a door open before me, and I could either go through that door and move closer to God, or I could close that door. He says, it felt like I was in armor or a corset, and I was all bound up, and I could either take that tight clothing off, or I could keep it on and remain bound. He said it was a real choice. And he wrote this, I chose to open, to unbuckle, to loosen the rein. I say I chose, yet it did not seem really possible to do the opposite. God was calling him, and he made a choice and turned towards God. And over the next few years, he became a Christian. God was calling Ruth that day on the road, and she responded, and she said, I will go with your God. Even though it makes no sense for my life plans, I will go with your God. And so she left her country and went and followed the God of Abraham. We could compare her to Abraham, the patriarch, could we not? You know his story. He was called to leave a pagan land. He was called from the land of Ur and Haran, and he went and he took his family, and God promised him, said, if you follow me and go with me, I will give you all of this land as your inheritance, and your descendants will be like the stars in the heavens. This is what God says to Abraham. He said, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you, and I will make you into a great nation. And I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who curse you. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. So Abraham left. He took his family, and in faith, followed God. Ruth left and followed God, but she didn't have all those promises of blessing. She'd only seen suffering and pain. She had no family, she had no money, no resources to take with her on her trip. The safe move would have been for her to stay in Moab, to go back to her own people. At least her brothers could care for her. She had no promises, she had nothing. This makes her faith radical. Ruth has a radical, deep faith that refuses to say to Naomi, so much for your God, look where it got you. She has a faith that is grounded in the God who created her and who reveals himself in creation and history and in his people, and a God who called out to her and brought her to himself. Ruth is a reminder to us this morning that the most important thing in all of life, the most important thing, the purpose for which we were made, is to know the God who made us and to walk through life as his child, no matter what it costs us. And so he calls to us this morning. He says, I made you. I love you. Come walk with me. And if you've read the end of Ruth's story, you do know that God does provide, and he works through her. And she goes on to become an ancestor of the King David and the Messiah through her reign because of her faithfulness. God is faithful to her. The God who made us calls out to us, "Come be my child. Follow me."